Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Today's cool fact of the day is that the antibodies in your body that attack wheat gliadin, one of the proteins from wheat, also happen to attack your heart tissue. So much for when you see claims like heart healthy whole grains. Whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you're a performance athlete, it doesn't really matter. Grains are not a part of being healthy cognitively or healthy from a cardiac perspective or just healthy in general. You're listening to episode 5 of Upgraded Self Radio. This is Dave from the Bulletproof Executive blog talking about how you can upgrade your mind, your body, and your life to levels you never thought possible.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today, we have a great interview with Rick Green and John Cowns from Hyperion Biotechnology. These guys have created a unique test that is the first of its kind to accurately measure fatigue. It actually measures salivary peptides to determine exactly how fatigued or tired you are, whether it's from some kind of athletic training or just from emotional or other forms of physical stress, which could even include like job stress or relationship stress. These are the kinds of stress that make you not bulletproof. This can even come from venture capital fundraising stress. It doesn't matter where it's from, but if you can measure your body to know what's going on, it's really cool. This is a brand new test, and we're really excited to be able to share this new tool for self-quantification with you.
I'm here today with Rick Green and John Cowns, the inventors of the technology behind something called the Fatigue Biomarker Test, which we're going to talk about today. So guys, thank you so much for coming on the interview.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Cool. So what, before we get into this very deeply, what is a fatigue biomarker and how did you all discover this technology and get into it?
Well, the story goes like this. We had this idea that there was a real deficit in understanding how to make things better for soldiers that were being deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan after the war on terror got started. And what was ultimately happening was a lot of folks were having to pull really long duty cycles, and not only that, that they had to, you know, haul around huge amounts of weight, like when soldiers deploy now, and this is always been the case, they have literally 120 pounds of gear that they're carrying, including weapons and all, and ammunition and water and a whole bunch of things going on. It's very stressful. They often are up for very long periods of time. And the question came up, you know, how far can you push guys before they crack and you get into some real problems in terms of complete operations? And, you know, the bottom line is you don't want people hurt and killed if you can avoid it. War is a messy business. There's no doubt about it. And so the Army came out with an idea. They said, okay, are there ways that we can assess fatigue? Because we know fatigue is a major source of accidents and problems that we get into, injuries, the things that happen, are related to fatigue. So we need better ways of measuring fatigue so we can minimize it on the battlefield and basically use soldiers more effectively to accomplish the tasks that they have to do. So we looked at that as an opportunity. We're very interested in that idea. And we see that that's, you know, something that really is unanswered in the private sector, too. There's a big demand for ways of measuring fatigue in the private sector, as you probably can think about. So we got a grant for $850,000 from the Army to develop these fatigue biomarkers. And long story short, we wanted to look at saliva because that's something that you can sample easily. You don't have to stick someone in the arm and get a blood sample or do anything like that. You know, capturing a urine sample is kind of nice, sort of, but it has its own logistic problems, too. And saliva seems like a really good way to go on this. Second thing is we were thinking that a lot of metabolic events are really probably what we're going to be looking at, and that those metabolic events are often expressed as changes in or removal of short little bits of enzymes that are related to metabolism. And our idea was that these little short little bits that are cut off of these big enzymes are going to wind up in the blood and ultimately in the saliva, and that we can measure those things and measure metabolic events such as transition to burning lipids as an event that we will be able to detect with our marker technology. So we went into it with no assumptions about what we were going to find. And so what we did was we just got people on treadmills. We worked with the University of Montana on this. And what they did is put people on treadmills and cycle ergometers for 8 hours. And we got saliva samples at various times. At the end of the 8 hours, they were all very tired. And these are really healthy people. These are recreational cyclists. They're folks in very, very good shape. They're very young, and they look a lot like the military population, except they might actually be in better shape than a lot of the guys that were over there in Iraq. Long story short, we compared the composition of saliva. We focused on the low molecular weight components. We focused mainly on peptides. And so we took a sample of saliva from one of these guys before they started their endurance exercise and at the end of the 8-hour period and compared the compositions using liquid chromatography, mass spectroscopy, and some bioinformatics tools that we invented here. Finally, we identified a number of things that were, sure enough, related to physical performance capability. And a couple of those peptides, we actually have them synthesized. We filed patent on them now, and so it's very hot stuff. And a bottom line is when you're fatigued, some of these peptides are reduced in their abundance by 1,000 to 10,000 fold. So they're high initially, and they're present in relatively large amounts in your saliva. As you get really, really fatigued, they virtually disappear. And so we have essentially like a yes-no marker for fatigue. And this is related specifically to physical fatigue and the ability to perform physical exercise. So we are very excited by this. One application that we've used is in training of special operations forces. And one of the issues in special operations is that guys get out of basic training, they're in good shape, and they're really, really motivated, typically. But even despite all that, about 50 to 80% of the folks that go into special training, special operations training, never, ever make it through. They fail in the first, what's called the indoctrination session. This is a fairly rigorous training cycle. And one of the things we thought about was, if the guys were coming in fatigued, could we predict who was going to fail and who was going to succeed? And lo and behold, our fatigue biomarker does a very good job of predicting who's going to fail and succeed. Now, in terms of military operations, that's important because you can reduce the number of failures by judiciously selecting the folks to go into special forces training cycle and to become special forces operators. Another important example there is that if you have fatigue detected with our markers, you can go to these guys and say, look, you're fatigued. Let's find out why, and let's make you less fatigued. And that's the really exciting part, where we can start applying different types of interventions, changes in training, changes in sleep, changes in diet, to essentially make a very fit person even better. And I guess that's kind of the kind of long-winded but short answer to what we think is a fascinating and ultimately a very beneficial technology.
Yeah, that's great. How long have people known about the relationship between salivary peptides and stress? Is this something you all just discovered?
Yeah, this is something that we discovered, and I alluded to this idea that our original hypothesis was that we were going to see small fragments from enzymes that are related to energy utilization. What we found, though, was something that was more exciting in a way and a little bit surprising. Namely, the peptides that we found are fragments of a larger protein that is expressed only by the salivary gland. And what we found out was that the abundance of these fractions is really controlled by the physical fatigue state and other types of states, which I can't get into because of patent issues that are pending right now. But that the salivary gland is linked up both to the neuroendocrine system, the immune system, and the brain itself. So we know that those linkages exist. And lo and behold, as you get more fatigued, the behavior of the salivary gland as an exocrine functioning gland actually changes in a very profound and significant way that we can measure by looking at the composition of saliva.
So could this test possibly predict mental fatigue and maybe immune system depression and those kinds of things as well?
Well, I think you tap on a very hot area, and I just have to say that I have to be very careful. I really can't comment on that because I'll just say this. We have a number of different research programs that are in the works right now. We have a number of different collaborators in the federal government, and I think there's a real opportunity to understand how the composition of saliva is linked to all types of different physical phenomena. And I'm being cagey deliberately because, again, I don't want to make public disclosure of things that could jeopardize patentability of some of our technology that's coming online.
Fair enough. Sounds good. So how do you go about measuring these peptides? How is the test performed? Does somebody spit in a little tube and mail it to you, or how is it done?
That's exactly right. Is what you do is we would send you a 15 mil centrifuge tube, which is 15 milliliters of saliva, is about, 2 tablespoons of saliva. Take you about 3 to 5, maybe 6 minutes to accumulate that much. You spit in the tube, seal it up, put it back in the mailer, and send it to us. One of the things that we know about our physical fatigue peptides is that they're relatively stable. And so sending by regular U.S. mail, it's just fine. So they come to us, we get the saliva, we do a bunch of proprietary processing to kind of clean up and refine and get to the biomarker, and then we apply a technology that's called liquid chromatography mass spectroscopy. And what that enables us to do is to separate all the different components of saliva after our preliminary steps. And there's about 5,000 to 10,000 different components, distinct chemical components there. And so we separate them out using chromatography, and then we use a very precise detector, which is a mass spectrometer. And that tells us not only the abundance of the compounds of interest, but also their chemical identity. So we're this is really the cutting edge way that many analytes are measured in clinical laboratories. And this is really the state of the art right here. It's not cheap, but it is the definitive way of doing this type of assessment.
Do you see any opportunities in the future for doing a home testing kit so you wouldn't have to mail it in?
Yeah, if you want to, you can go to fatiguebiomarker.com and order the test. It's $55 for a single test.
In the future, do you ever think maybe there could be something like a, almost like a pregnancy test where you spit into a little spot and it'll tell you, like on a graded scale, what your fatigue markers are?
Absolutely. And one of the great things there is that we have worked with some companies to actually define the components of this type of a test. And we've talked to a number of companies. The trick here is to make a pregnancy test, what you need is a molecule which will recognize and bind to your molecule of interest with very high affinity. And typically, for all these what are called point-of-care tests like this, you raise up antibodies, an immune response, collect the antibodies against these things, and you use those as detection platform. That does two things for you. One, it can shorten the time to get a test completed from literally days or a week, which is what we're looking at right now, to perhaps as short as an hour or even half an hour. There's other technologies that are coming online that can make this almost real time, where you can get test results essentially in 30 minutes, maybe 2 minutes even. So we're going down that road, and we hope to have something like that in maybe another year or two.
Wow, that sounds great. How do you know whether I'm actually fatigued or not? Like, what kind of standard are you comparing it to for reference?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, this is part of the very interesting philosophical issue that I think surrounds the whole idea of fatigue. What is fatigue? You know, how do you define it? And I think there's a lot of questions about that. What we've tied it to in terms of this are different types of outcome measures. For example, when we did the cycle ergometer testing, we were looking at the ability of folks to maintain a standard mechanical output, let's say on the cycle ergometer. Can they pedal at the same rate all the time? That's one way of assessing it. As you get more fatigued, you can't maintain a steady rate of energy output like that. As you well know, you get a little bit choppy and your performance becomes a little bit less consistent. Another thing that we did was to ask about their what's called a POM score, and this is an assessment of how one perceives their exertional output and how difficult the task is. There's a really extensive literature on use of these types of measures, and they're essentially a visual analog that says, you know, from on a scale of 1 to 20, was this really hard? Is this the hardest thing you ever did? Or maybe it's not such a hard thing at all. And so we were tracking folks using this measurement scale over time and linking that to the biomarker. So essentially, as folks got more tired, there was a correlation between the fatigue that they expressed and the levels of the biomarker. Now, the question obviously becomes, well, why don't you just ask people how fatigued they are? And where you get into problems there is that perception of fatigue is altogether something different than the actual fatigue status and the actual capability of the individual. And as you well know, there's a lot of factors that can play into how one does, let's say, in a race or in any kind of athletic competition. And that there's a lot of factors that go into that, and physical fatigue is only one of them. You know, so we really, we hope that this would be a positive feedback where folks would get this information back and say, well, look, I'm not as fatigued as I thought I was, or I'm really fatigued according to the biomarker test, but guess what? I'm not doing as bad as I could be. You know, so there's a lot of ways of spinning this. And ultimately, what you use the information for is to make yourself a better, more capable athlete and a better person, I think, ultimately. That's where we're going. Finally, the really complex outcome was the success in the special forces guys, predicting who will succeed and who will fail. And I'll tell you, special forces training is very complex. It's not just an athletic challenge. There's a lot of mental challenges there too. And in fact, the mental challenges are probably more significant. So when we found out our biomarker could predict success or failure, we were very excited because this really says, validates the whole claim that we're predicting something which is very useful in life generally, not just in terms of physical performance. So, of course, the physical performance is really where this thing is linked. So, again, a complicated issue, and fatigue, I think we don't even have a good language of talking about it yet, but I think our technology will certainly enable that discussion to go forward.
So when you were testing the people who are going into special forces training, what kind of accuracy did this test have? What percentage of the special forces people who were high on the fatigue biomarker or who had high levels of fatigue ended up failing?
Well, it's a distribution. It's a statistical distribution. I can tell you this. If your marker comes in suggesting fatigue, let's say at a level of 0.1, which is very fatigued, your chances of failing are about 90%. If you come in at a level of 1 or above, and this is suggesting that you're not very fatigued at all, your chances of succeeding are about 80 to 90%. Now, folks that fall in the middle of that range, which is maybe about 30 to 50% of the folks there, their likelihood is a little bit mixed. You can't make such profound conclusions about it. So again, there's trends there. In other words, if you're on the low end of the high part of the scale, you're more likely to succeed than if you're at the lower end. But there are some absolute cutoffs here that really I think would be useful in determining definitively, wow, you're really fatigued, or hey, you're doing pretty good and you're about as good off as you're ever going to be in terms of your physical capability.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what is the scale for how fatigued somebody is? You said 0.1 to 1. Have you ever had somebody who's like more than 1? Or so what is the scale graded on?
Well, we have, the way we look at the scale, and this is the kind of feedback that we would get back to somebody who actually takes the test, is if your level is above 1, you're essentially in pretty good shape. And, you're probably doing the right things. There's probably some room for improvement, and this is something we need more data. I'm a scientist, and I'm always a little cautious to make too many conclusions. I think the higher you are, and we did measure some people as high as 100, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but if you're above 1, you're in pretty good shape. Now, if you're between the range of 1 and, say, 0.1, you're somebody that could be improved. In other words, you're showing evidence of fatigue, and there's probably interventions or changes that you can do in your life that would probably improve your fatigue score and probably improve your physical capability. Now, if you're below 0.1, that suggests that you're really fatigued, that you have some real issues that need to be addressed for you to come up anywhere near to where you should be. And that really, that's the person that we want to reach out to and say, look, find out where your life is. Find out what your training's about. Find out about your personal life. Think about it introspectively. And we invite you to make some changes and measure the fatigue biomarker after you make those changes and see if it improves. And that's the great thing about this, I think, is that over time, this allows people to get better over time and improve their own physical performance capability. That's what's really exciting here.
Yeah, it is. Now, there are a lot of other measures for fatigue. I know depressed heart rate is one measure, your general mood, your performance in workouts, your blood lactate, all sorts of other measurements. What makes this better or worse than those? What kind of advantages does this fatigue biomarker test have over the standard measures of fatigue?
Right. It's a really good question. I think what plagues a lot of things like lactate, cortisol, some of the hard measures that have been around for a very long time, is that they're highly variable and they're dependent on a lot of different factors that come into play. ultimately, we when we did some of our testing here, we did measure things like salivary cortisol, and we did measure things like lactate. And when we stood them up against our marker, the thing that really comes out is that the variability for our marker is much, much smaller than it is for some of these other measures. And what that means is that, you know, we're seeing things decline, for example, by 1,000 to 10,000 fold. When you see changes occurring in cortisol, you know, you're lucky if you're seeing something that's maybe between two-fold, three-fold, four-fold. Lactate spikes, again, yeah, you can see a pretty significant increase in lactate, but the variability, even within a single individual, is so large. And so we see with our marker that it's essentially an off-on switch. And within a population of people, again, we see very tighter distributions here. And that's the main advantage. The heart rate measures, like what you can get out of a Polar monitor or other types of things, yeah, they're useful, but again, they're susceptible to a lot of different inputs. And the software, I would argue, also is a little bit, you don't know exactly what you're getting out of this. And there's a lot of things that can affect heart rate variability or RR interval measures. Ironically, we are working and have patented some technology to use RR intervals measured with a chest strap, and results are interesting, but we don't see a really great relationship there to physical performance, not as good as what we have with our markers.
Are there any factors that could affect the test? As you said, it's a salivary peptide test. So it seems like if you ate something before the test, it might throw it off. Is that true?
Well, that's a great point. And in fact, when we did our initial exploration studies with the University of Montana, one of the things that the exercise physiologist that we were working with was interested in about carbohydrate loading taking place four hours into this endurance test. And he really wanted to see, you know, exercise physiologists, as you know, are very interested in different ways of tweaking things to make people perform better. And what we found out was this intermediate meal of carbohydrate had no more effect than feeding of a placebo. So the answer is we don't think food has a great effect on this. Carbohydrate loading doesn't seem to have a big effect on this. Hydration is one of the things that comes to mind. When you're dehydrated, especially after a long endurance event, our test actually measures two peptides. And one of them is something that we use to normalize for the effects of dehydration. So actually, we're not measuring just dehydration when we measure the peptide. We're actually normalizing for that dehydration event. And so our test is even more accurate than it otherwise would be. So I hope that kind of answers the question, but it's a complicated issue, and one we really invite people to explore. Again, not all people are the same, and some interventions are going to be more effective than others, I think.
Yeah, that was perfect. So is this meant to provide an overview of stress in someone's life, accounting for numerous factors, or is it more of something you might use after a workout and then send it in and see exactly how fatigued you really were during the workout?
Well, this is a very interesting question. When we discovered this thing, again, we were looking for dramatic changes in composition that were associated with an acute, relatively short-term endurance exercise. That's what we were looking for. Now, were the folks that were undergoing a short-term bout of exercise acutely stressed or seeing stressors in their life overall? I don't know. I think the answer is probably not to a great degree. However, this is the really cool part, I think, is that when you look at the special forces guys that were coming in, we were measuring a single saliva sample at the outset of the training regime. Now, they go through a 12-week training regime for the special forces guys that we looked at. So that single saliva sample before they started training indicated whether or not they were going to fall out during that 12-week period. Now, that would suggest to me that we're looking at more than simply the acute phase performance characteristic of an individual. I think when we observe a low level of the marker, we're looking at something which tells greater. It's about the totality of the individual's performance capability. And I think that totality is influenced to a great extent by emotional stressors, psychological stressors, immunologic stress, and the whole galaxy of different things that could predict whether or not someone's going to succeed during special forces training. So I think the answer is yes, but we need more data, and I think that's the bottom line, and we're working on that right now.
As people begin to take this test, are you like accumulating a large body of data that you can draw on to look at these kinds of things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what makes this really cool, I think, is over time, we hope to accumulate a lot of data on people, both from controlled studies and studies that are relatively uncontrolled. I think where this is potentially going, and we hope, of course, that it goes to something which is kind of viral, where people are talking and discussing among themselves about what they did and how it affected their biomarker levels. You know, you can imagine that a lot of folks are going to start sharing information about supplements. And I think this really talks to the whole supplements industry, because we both know that, you know, something winding up in a muscle mag with some celebrity making an endorsement doesn't necessarily mean that the supplement's efficacious or safe, right? And so this is the way that people can answer for themselves, does the supplement really help me objectively or not? And placebo effects can be profound with regard to supplement use. And really, for any kind of intervention, whether you're going with a new trainer, you know, new foot gear, whatever it is, you know, you tend to believe that that stuff will work. This is not meant to degrade that, but to enable you to really understand objectively whether the interventions that you're doing are really effective for you or not. The results might be surprising, you know, and we hope that the community shares through Hyperion this information, and that users share it among themselves. I think once the discussion gets going, it's going to revolutionize the supplements and really athletic pursuits overall. I think it's going to be absolutely revolutionary.
This is great. I mean, you often hear one of the factors for selecting supplements should be whether you really feel a difference or not. But oftentimes, you're not going to feel a difference. It might be very subtle, but you still want to know it's working. And this seems like it would be a perfect way to actually make sure you're getting what your money's worth. That sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I think a really good and well-studied analog to this is the use of depression medication. And why I bring that up is that depression medication, is when they do these big controlled studies by the pharmaceutical companies, about 40% of the people that are treated with a placebo show significant positive benefit from taking the placebo. And that's a big deal. And in fact, the drugs often show just a minimal improvement over placebo. And there's been a lot written about that lately. And I think folks that use supplements ought to take that to heart, you know, that, you know, if you have a positive outlook, that can make all the difference in the world. But still, it may not really be having any demonstrable real effects on your body.
Right. Let's say there's somebody who's not an athlete, but they're just a hardworking, like, mom or something like that, like a soccer mom. He's working really hard, trying to get her kids all over the place. Could she use something like this to try and see try and quantify the amount of stress that's in her life? So basically any person could actually get an objective marker for their stress?
Yeah, I think that's the really exciting part. And that this marker really could be of great benefit and give people some pause and think about what they're doing in their lives. I think there's so many people that are pushing themselves so hard, and they have so many different things going on. They got the kids, they got the job, they got things that they got to do at home. You know, they got activities. They're spending 2 hours a day on the road. I mean, it's absolutely endless. And I think this kind of thing says, hey, look, take a rest. Think about what you're eating. Here it is in black and white. Here's the results. Are you on the right path, or could your life be better? I think this is the enabling technology that we really need for that.
It's often hard for people in any job to come in and really say, like, we're being overworked. And the person can always just say, well, what do you mean? Like, there's no real objective measure for overworked. And so this might be useful for somebody who's trying to explain to somebody else how far they're really pushing themselves, and they can show them with numbers. I am, like, this fatigued. I need to take a break. So that might be useful for that.
Well, there's a lot of professions, and boy, you know, where the stakes are really high, and I think the stakes are really high for teachers, too. You know, where I think you're absolutely right. You know, you would you want a physician that was super fatigued operating on you? I think the answer is no, you know. And so, yeah, there's a lot of applications out there, and there's a lot of interest in the technology.
Cool. So now I'd like to get a little bit more into the details of the test. So when somebody orders the test, what happens? Can you take us through the process of what it's like to go through, get this test done on yourself?
Right. Well, first comes the money. We have a credit card enabled website. So what you do is basically punch in your credit card information, secure website, www.fatiguebiomarker.com. And then what we'll do is we'll send you a sample collection kit, which is just brutally simple. It'll have some collection tubes in it with some very simple instructions. You know, don't brush your teeth, don't drink a lot of water right before taking the test, and then spit in the tube until you get the required amount. Seal it up, put it back in the mailer, and drop it in a mailbox. It's really that simple. And then what we do is, again, we do some fancy chemical preparation of the saliva. We really clean it up and separate it. And then we stick it in our LC-MS machine, liquid chromatography mass spec machine, and we get a readout. Now, that readout will give you the concentration of your fatigue biomarker, and we will express that and let you know, in terms of our population knowledge, where you fall. You're either, again, 1 and above, which is good, 1 to 0.1, which is, well, you know, you got probably some issues that are addressable, or less than 0.1, which means that you're really fatigued and you really got to take a careful look at what your life is all about. And then, you know, I think from there, we have some suggestions. We suggest on the website that you could actually run your own what's called a crossover study where, for example, if you're doing a 10-mile run, you take a sample before the 10-mile run, after the 10-mile run, and then you do it, let's say, a few days later, but you're doing your, let's say you're doing some supplement that you hope will make you better and less fatigued. Well, you repeat, you take the supplement, measure your biomarker before the run and then after the run. And what we'll do is give you a detailed assessment of how your fatigue level was affected by the supplement. And again, that's where we see a lot of value. I forget, Rick, what the cost of that one is, but it's highly discounted. I think we're asking for those four tests, I think it's $110 or something like that. So if you order a little bit more, you get a lot more value back as well.
So how does somebody see their test results? Are they mailed to them in an email or a snail mail, or is it on the website? How does that work?
Well, we would email it to somebody, and again, it would be a nice PDF form. That would, I think, you know, be very descriptive. Tell you about the technology, tell you about the interpretation of the results, and it'd be put a fairly succinct document and something that would not be overly technical. Though, again, we invite people to really think about what it is that they're doing. And we like that kind of technical discussion. In fact, we would really like to talk to people about their ideas of what they would like to see measured. And we're willing to work with folks to design a testing regime that really makes sense and answers the questions that they want to answer. There's more than one way to skin this cat, I think. And we really look forward to working with people on this.
So how long does it take for the test to get completed once somebody sends in their saliva sample?
Well, we can turn around the test in about a week. It kind of depends on the workflow. Maybe as little as just a few days, depending. Again, this is a fancy test. No two ways about it. It's expensive. It's time-consuming. But the results are really, really, we believe, revolutionary. So we're looking at about a week.
So if for whatever reason there was a mistake on the test, would the person get a new one?
Absolutely. No questions asked.
If somebody wanted to learn more about this technology, where can they go?
Well, one good source is www.fatiguebiomarker.com. And also, we have more information. I need to check up on what the website's about. But once you order a test, we will give you some more information about the test. There are some published studies out there. There's one article in Military Medicine that I could send to you, and we'd be happy to have that distributed, though we have to be mindful of publication rights and that kind of good stuff. We have another couple of publications that are coming out in the peer-reviewed scientific literature as well that talk about the utilization of the test, and there's more coming. It's really a scientific thing that we got here, and it's not all smoke and mirrors or celebrity endorsements. That's what makes the product so different.
Great. Well, I'd love to get those studies, and I'll definitely publish those in the show notes too, so people can look at them and see them for themselves. And thank you so much for doing the interview. That was great. I hope to talk again soon, and I hope your company does well, because I certainly plan on trying it out. See you, man. Thanks.
You can find links to everything we talked about today in the show notes at bulletproofexec.com. If you enjoyed this, leave us a positive ranking on iTunes. Have you heard about our new Brain Octane Oil? It goes far beyond upgraded MCT or any other coconut product for creating maximum cognitive function. This is about 4% of what's in coconut oil. It's 18 times stronger than coconut oil, and it's what I put in my bulletproof coffee every single day. I use upgraded coffee beans, Brain Octane Oil. In my case, I can take 2 tablespoons of it, but a lot of people use much less than that. And I put a couple tablespoons of grass-fed butter in there, blend it, and have an amazing day. If you haven't felt the difference between upgraded MCT and Brain Octane Oil, you owe it to yourself to give it a shot.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.